Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, presented by UNC Family Medicine. Your Health, providing practical health-related news and information for our community, as Dr. Page and Goldstein specialize in patient care at UNC Family Medicine. And now, Your Health.
Welcome to UNC Family Medicine's Your Health, supported by UNC Healthcare. I'm Dr. Adam Goldstein.
And I'm Dr. Christy Page.
And on our show today, Christy, we have a unique opportunity to talk with several individuals who are remarkable. We're going to be talking with Jack Plack, a retired CPA, Amir Sweedy, postdoctoral fellow at Ben-Gurion University of the Negev in Israel, and Matan Afik, an undergraduate student at the Arva Institute for Environmental Studies, about environment, health, and peace.
And Adam, instead of a research that matters today, we're going to have an extended conversation that matters, considering we have three important guests, all from an international setting. So I think between our voices, we're going to need to introduce ourselves. I'm really excited to meet all three of you, and would love if we could start out by having, so we'll start with Jack, and have you give us your name so we can hear your voice and a fact or two about yourself that our listeners might want to know.
Okay. My name is Jack Platt, and I live in the Philadelphia area, suburb of Philadelphia. And about 11 years ago, I learned about the Arva Institute by doing a 300-mile bike ride in Israel. Subsequently, I got very involved with the organization, and then, again, as I'll talk about later, I assume, my kidneys failed about 4 or 5 years ago. And so I did this bike ride this year with a little handicap, if you will.
Well, I know we're not going to let that morsel lie there. We're going to pick that up because it is quite remarkable. But maybe, Amir, you could tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, Adam and Christy. My name is Amir Sweeti. Originally, I'm from Amman, Jordan. I grew up there. And now I'm a postdoctoral fellowship student at Ben-Gurion University of the Negev, mainly interested in desalination, water treatment, wastewater treatment. I heard about the Arava Institute a while ago when my fellow student was studying at the Arava Institute, and he recommended this place to me. And I joined, and I was enrolled in many activities with Arava Institute, and it ended up like I'm getting a PhD, finishing a PhD, and now finishing a postdoc. All the help and the support was through the Arava Institute.
And you said water desalinization. Just define that for our listeners so they know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so we mainly in the Middle East, we are facing water scarcity problems. And it's demanding us to find a new technology to abstract salt out of water and to clean it. So basically what we are doing now, we are doing abstracting the salt out of the water so it will be drinkable and also be for like domestic uses.
Oh, we
including recycling the water, recycling wastewater for different purposes and different uses.
Well, we definitely want to come back to that very important topic about water and clean water. Matan, introduce yourself for us.
Hi, Adam and Chrissy. So my name is Matan Afik, as you mentioned. I live in Western Jerusalem in Israel. I studied at the Arava Institute at 2008-2009, and since then I've completed my undergrad degree in dance and sociology and anthropology with a minor in environmental sciences. Contemporary, I work as a research assistant and dancer. And hopefully next year I will be taking my master's degree in environmental policy.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, you know, we've just kind of opened up some doors. And one of the doors we opened up is that of the Arava Institute. I wonder if Amir, if you might just tell us, what is the Arava Institute? And then, Jack, maybe tell us how you first actually became aware of this organization. So, Amir?
Yeah, so the Arava Institute is a unique program dealing with environmental issues, mainly. But at the same time, it's dealing with the coexistence issues between Arab and Jewish. Usually, you have students who are coming from regions in the Middle East, from Jordan, from Israel, from the West Bank, also from the United States and North America, to deal about the environment also. And the same thing, use the environment to bridge the gap between the different nationals and different nations. Especially during this kind of tough time, this place is like a place. It's just Jewish and Arabs are dealing in daily basis with each other for some topics which is really touching everyone who lives in this area, especially when you have like water problems, desertification problems. So how to solve all of these problems to create a sustainable living, a way of living, also use the environment to bridge the gap between the Arab and the Jewish.
Great. And Jack, how did you become aware?
Well, in 2004, a very good friend of mine had signed up for a bike ride in Israel and sent me a request for a donation to his ride. And I looked at what he sent me and I was like, wow, this would be really interesting. I'm of a generation where I basically feel like I grew up on a bicycle. And this would be an interesting experience. And I had never been to Israel before. So I signed up to do this bike ride, and then I learned about the Arava Institute from being on the bike ride, and it's just an amazingly interesting and forward-thinking organization that is doing some wonderful things in a very difficult area and bringing lots of people together.
You know, all of you, we've now brought up this bike ride a couple times here, and I'm pretty sure that I'm the one out of the five of us in this conversation, the only one who has not done this bike ride. Is this correct?
I think that's correct, Christy.
Okay, well,
I guess so. Yeah.
I'm odd woman out here.
The challenge is on.
Exactly. So you guys, and maybe Matan, you could tell me this. Describe a little bit about what this bike ride is all about and how all four of you became bonded in this process.
Well, I've been working for the bike ride in the past few years. When I could, it wasn't always possible since I was also a student. The ride is an initiative, first and foremost, I think, to recruit money for the Arava Institute. And it's a collaboration of Chazon, which is a Jewish environmental organization that works in North America, and the Arava Institute, and it brings people who want to join the ride, I mean the riders, into, I think, a really magnificent ride. It's very professional on one hand, but it's very family-like. It's very close, and the staff is always composed of alumni, and as a staff member, you get to work with people who you might have studied with in the past or not, but whom you don't really get to see all the time because either you don't live in the same country or you don't live in the same area, and sometimes it's not even possible for you to cross to where the other person lives. And for the riders, it's an opportunity to see, I mean, the sort of interactions and friendships and dynamics that the Arava Institute brings about.
Well, we're going to need to take a short break, but I think when we come back, I think we want to delve into two different issues. We want to talk about the work in conflict resolution and how you all approach that as students and alumni. We certainly want to hear Jack's story, really remarkable, of courage biking on it. And then I think we certainly want to hear about the research. And so we're going to take a short break, but when we return, we'll continue having our conversations with Jack Platt, Amir Sweedy, and Matan Afik with the Arava Institute for Environmental Studies about environment, health, and peace. You're listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page. We'll be right back.
Mm-hmm.
UNC Family Medicine's number 2 ranked national program is rapidly transforming healthcare through excellence in teaching, clinical care, and research. To participate in UNC Family Medicine's efforts to move innovative ideas into action, call 919-843-5112 or email yourhealth@unc.edu.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, a presentation of UNC Family Medicine. Now, more of Your Health.
Welcome back. You've been listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page. We're having an extended conversation today about the environment, health, and peace, about the Arava Institute for Environmental Studies. And we've been talking with Jack Platt, Amir Sweedy, and Matan Afik. And we want to thank you for your time today. And Jack, you mentioned in our first segment, just gave us that tidbit, that morsel about health changes that occurred to you when you were thinking about doing the ride again. Tell us about what happened and what did you do?
Many, many years ago, I was diagnosed with a kidney problem that progressed very slowly, focal sclerosis, FSGS is its common name. And it eventually caught up with me. And so since 2012, I've been on dialysis. I elected, when I went on dialysis, to try home hemodialysis. For the most part, over the last 3 years, I've been doing home hemodialysis virtually every day. I 6 days a week. And about a year and a half ago, I actually got a transplant, and unfortunately, the FSGS came back, and it only lasted about 6 months. So last December, I started up again on the dialysis. But I felt pretty good, and I really, really miss being able to get a chance to go over to Israel and do this bike ride. I had actually done it 7 times before, and I started to figure out logistically how that I could do it, and got support from my physicians in Philadelphia, and got support from the dialysis machine group. And the clinic with the Vita and NextStage, who makes the machine, and then I figured out how I was going to pull this off. So,
how did you do that?
The institute. Well, I had to ship supplies over to Israel, dialysate, and then it arrived just in time. And my goal was to ride at least something every day, hopefully from the morning to maybe lunchtime. And then having a car and a driver, I was able to move my equipment up to where we were going to stay that evening. And then my oldest son volunteered to be my care partner for this. So he got to ride with me, and then we worked this all out so that I could get dialysis just about each day that I needed to.
So remarkable.
And I did get to ride all 5 days of riding. I was on the bike at least for some amount of it.
And why, help us understand why, I mean, that's a lot of work and risk to put that together. What is it about this bike ride that was so important to you to make that happen?
Well, over the last 11 years since I did this first bike ride, I got very involved with the Institute on the North American side, developed some great friendships with people, and my wife and I are just very, very taken by the mission of the Institute and the results that we've seen. And individually, the students who we've met and the faculty are just incredible people. The Institute just believes that one of their greatest accomplishments is that they have built an enormous stockpile of trust among a varied background of people.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say that this goal of building trust and conflict resolution, I wonder, Matan, if you can tell us How does this actually work, and what's this experience like? And then, Amir, afterwards, tell us, is he really true?
Well, the Institute works, first of all, it works to recruit students from different backgrounds. That means that they strive for the student body to be composed of at least a third of Israeli Jews and at least a third of Arabs, like specifically Palestinians who are citizens of Israel, or Palestinians who are citizens of Jordan or from the West Bank, etc. And another third is usually international. A lot of the students will be American Jews, but not necessarily. We had a Moroccan student 2 years ago. We had people coming from New Zealand and Europe and other places around the globe. But it has two different focuses. One is purely academic. It evolves around environmental issues and environmental policy and sciences. But it definitely also raises a lot of issues that regard the area and the sort of inability to solve them because of the lack of collaboration between Israel and Palestine. For instance, there are a lot of water issues. A lot of the countries in this area, Jordan, Israel, and Palestine specifically, are areas, like, they have massive areas that are pretty arid. And Israel started almost 2 decades ago to use the sewage water, the water, what is called black water, and to treat them in order to be able to reuse them in agriculture. And so that way, the drinking water will not be used for agriculture, and some of the drinking water that were used for the agriculture can now be used purely for drinking causes. But the Palestinian side of the story would not be able to do the same thing because of different reasons of security or a lack of understanding and willingness from the Israeli side. So these kind of issues come about during the studies all the time, and you, as a student, you get that understanding of how much the conflict is really influencing your everyday life and the grand picture, but also, you know, the day-to-day situation. And another focus that the Arava Institute has, the non-academic one, is the conflict. And that mainly is meant for the students to get different means and opportunities to interact and to communicate in a way that holds the conflict without it exploding.
It really is a beautiful thing that there is such a deliberate strategy to bring together this varied nationality of the students.
Amir, could you just give us an example? Matan just said, you know, before things explode or erupt. What's he referring to? Let's just one real question. What's he referring to? And maybe an example from your work there. How did that play out?
Well, first of all, for me as a Jordanian who lived and grew up in Jordan most of his time, it was unbelievable and something that you can forget. It was for me the first time that I can meet Jewish people. I heard about them through the media. It was, you know, like this conflict, ongoing conflict for almost like 60-70 years. And what you hear from the media is different when you deal with the people. It was like something not easy for me. It was like a big compromise for me to come to study in Israel, first of all, as an Arab national. So how long are we going to live in this conflict? I mean, we have to step in and we have to start to think how to resolve things. If our leaders are not willing to do the right thing, we are the people and we have to take the action and we have to enroll and start to be involved in these kind of activities. Through the Arava Institute, if I wasn't there, I wasn't aware of so many problems regarding the environment and also how to solve things through dialogues and conversations and the talk. It's the best way to deal with people, to face them face to face. And for me, it was easier to talk to people face-to-face than just writing comments on some blogs or like on the social medias or like, you know, but to approach them, to talk to them, to understand the mentality, how they think about you, how we think about them. You ask something about like what's next. Usually we have something called the alumni group that involves more than 800 alumni. They are all like very active through the environment, through the Arab Institute. We are still in a good connection. We have this Facebook group that all the activities that's happening in which could involve the alumni, it's still like ongoing process. So we didn't finish our what we started. After we finished from the Arab Institute, it's a new beginning for what we finish at the Arab Institute, how we will keep the activities that we learn, all the skills, all the leadership skills that we learn through the Arab Institute, and we will just use it in our daily life, how to be patient with people, how to just like listen to things that happening in front of us, but to digest it more, not to be like sort of emotional people. We have to give things a right way. And through this, we learn how to balance things in our action. Yeah.
Well, we're gonna need to take a short break, but we should mention that Dr. Sweetie is the first foreign national for me Arab country to have received a PhD in Israel and the first Jordanian citizen to earn a doctoral degree from an Israeli university. So we want to congratulate you on your academic achievements. But we're going to take a short break. Oh, you're welcome. We thank you. But we'll continue when we come back our conversations with Jack Platt, Amir Sweetie, and Matan Afeek with the Arab Institute for Environmental Studies about environment, health, and peace. You'll be right back with Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page.
Your Health is supported by UNC Health Sciences Library and NC Health Info, working together to connect people everywhere with knowledge to improve health. Visit nchealthinfo.org for answers you can trust.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, presented by UNC Family Medicine. Now, more of Your Health.
Welcome back to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page. Today, we are having an extended conversation with three remarkable men, Jack Platt, Amir Sweetie, and Matan Afeek with the Arava Institute for Environmental Studies about environment, health, and peace. And before the break, in our last two segments, we've been talking about the Arava Institute and several elements related to environmental studies and conflict resolution. I wonder, Amir, if you would give us a little more information or give us an example of research that is going on at the Arava Institute.
Yeah, so there is the gray water system recycling. The Arab Institute has like three different models. They have built one in the West Bank, one for the Bedouin communities, and one also at the Institute. Basically, they are looking how they could use these systems, adopt it in household communities, especially where there's like no sewage line that's connected to these areas, especially in the Bedouin areas. They are looking for different parameters. What is the efficiency of using gray water systems, recycling for agriculture purposes, also for cleaning purposes? This is one of the examples that are involved. Also, to build solar panels in the Bedouin communities areas, the West Bank, how to use the sun radiation that we have like 300 days of sun, especially when you're talking about a desert area. They are doing research about it, adopting the solar panels, also using some sort of way to clean these solar panels in a dusty environment in the desert. There is also a project which deals to environmental education programs to go to the local communities, teach them about the environmental issues, increase the awareness of the people, how to do recycling, how to do organic farming, also how to do composting. So this is like another way of how the Arab Institute exposing damage or scoping more into the environment, especially in the local urban areas.
Wow. Wow, that's really impressive. And Jack, let me ask you a question. You know, in a landscape where different governments often have trouble working together, sometimes even within our own government, or finding common ground, why do you think it's important that the environmental and sustainability issues are good ones, maybe right ones to rally around?
Well, that's a very good question. And in this situation, the environment among the countries in the Middle East are all intertwined. And I think particularly for Americans who have a concept of the Middle East but don't truly understand exactly how close these different countries and areas are. And we were on a bike ride. Toward the end of the bike ride, we were approaching a lot, which is in the southern tip of Israel. There was a spot where we could look to our right and see into Egypt about 100 yards away and see into Jordan and even into Saudi Arabia. These borders are really like, in some cases, crossing a street. So the pollution and the air pollution, water issues are all so intertwined in the conflict that the ability to have now 800 plus graduates from the Arava Institute gives that ability to have interaction across borders so that different areas can be addressed in a timely and concurrent manner. And again, one of the things that I think, you know, again, we as Americans don't exactly realize, even during the times of conflict, there's still existing treaties about water management that are in place regardless of the political situation. So that it's just really a fascinating area to truly understand.
It makes a lot of sense to use that common need of helping and forwarding environmental issues to bring people together. And it certainly sounds like the Arava Institute is doing great work and research in environmental studies and has an important curriculum around conflict resolution, but that it's perhaps a role model for the rest of the world of how to bring people together in common issues to bind people and overcome what are some very contentious borders in that region. So in closing, I'd love if we could take a moment for each of you to leave our listeners with one final message about Arava or your personal experience in Israel that that we can learn from. Maybe we could start with you, Amer.
The Arava Institute is a great place that opened a lot of opportunities for me, especially continuing my studies. I arrived there with undergrad degree, and now I finished with ending up with a PhD from in a fascinated studies, especially dealing with the problem with water, cleaning the water, recycling the water, desalination, which is a very hot topic in the Middle East, even in the United States, in California. So it opened the horizon for me. It opened the new doors for me. Also, it opened my eyes, learning about the environment, learning about coexistence, these things that we have to emphasize for the coming generation, and we have to make a rigid and a solid structure for the coming generation to live in a clean environment, using clean water, and also to live the same side with other nations.
Well, that's wonderful. Matan, do you have a closing thought?
Maybe I'll just give you an anecdote. I think will be pretty self-explanatory about how significant the Arava experience can be. In my time during my studies at the Arava, the first Gaza war has erupted, and it was about a year after I finished my military service of 3 years at the Gaza Strip. It was And a year and a half, I stepped out of a very familiar place. And during my time at the Arava Institute, during the first Gaza war, I had the opportunity, difficult opportunity, of sitting with people who had then become already friends while they worry about their families and friends at the Gaza Strip. And while I was beginning to worry about me being maybe possibly recruited, and about my and other people worried about their friends or family who were serving as soldiers during the Gaza war. But the thing is it was a very difficult time. I'm not gonna say it was a happy time. But I don't think there was any other room, like, in the area where people from Palestine, Israel, Jordan, and other nationalities, which were possibly less involved in the like, violent conflict at the time, were sitting together, sharing experiences at the same time, and setting a possible different interaction to what was going on and taking place at the same time outside, not very far from where we sat.
Well, I think we need to really thank Matan and Amir for your work as students and alumni, and Jack for your work that's courageous and supportive and bringing it to new audiences. And thank you all for sharing your experiences and knowledge and passion for the environment and also peace and health on your health. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Coming up on House Calls, we'll be answering questions about your health. You're listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, sponsored by UNC Family Medicine. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Your Health, Christy. That was an incredible conversation. So glad we were able to hear and listen and learn.
It was. And we get to have a little bit more conversation between the two of us now for our House Call segment of our show today. And we're going to spend a few minutes talking about our listeners' health questions and their concerns.
Daniel, our great executive producer, Daniel Lane, what's our very first house call?
My mother was recently in hospice. She was dying of cancer, but she also had good quality of life. When asked about do not resuscitate status, she said she wanted to live, and at that time, she did not want to be a DNR. The hospice doctor seemed taken aback, as if she were a little disappointed even. We were taken aback with this reaction. What are your thoughts?
Well, this is a hard, hard conversation, and I've been on both ends of this spectrum, both hearing people talk to my family members about DNR and also having these conversations. What about you, Christy?
Well, I know I've been on both sides of it, too. And just to clarify for our listeners, this DNR, this do not resuscitate, means that if medical professionals were to find you down or not waking up or struggling to breathe, that they would do CPR, sometimes shocks or intubations, or put you on breathing machine or something to help you to do everything possible to help to revive you. And in a lot of situations, in most situations, with someone who is sick enough to be in hospice, the chance that process of CPR resuscitation would revive you are relatively low.
Yeah, and yet. Here we have someone who really does have the capacity to make decisions and has a good quality of life. And they're saying they're not quite ready to either have that discussion fully yet, or they said if something happened tomorrow, they still want to have some control over what happens. And that seems reasonable. And I think sometimes we think, oh, it would be futile, and it might be at some level, but that doesn't mean that we still don't have to negotiate and hear. So I think there's a disconnect here clearly between what the doctor was kind of thinking was going to happen and what the patient kind of said what was going to happen, which is not the same.
A lot of times, as you say, a disconnect, a lot of times it's just not clear communication about what exactly we're
Good
talking
point.
About. It's not do you want to live or not, but let's play out the different scenarios and really talk about it. And it sounds like the doctor needs to spend a little more time going through this with your family
member. And also, it doesn't mean you're giving up, and it doesn't mean you're not going to be there and support each other. And that's part of what really sometimes
–
yep.
Right?
Exactly.
It's complicated. We should revisit this on a future show because there are so many complexities to this, and it's important that we're talking about this with our family members.
Daniel, what's our very next house call?
Recently, my brother was dying, and we were so surprised and pleased to see our family doctor coming to our house to check up on him. Does this happen routinely? We know the old-time GP used to do this, but we did not think doctors still did this kind of thing.
Well, this is kind of the flip end of the spectrum, and this is one I bet Christy and I are going to both be, yes, we're so glad, not that someone's dying, but that the doctor is there for the patient, and whether it's a family doctor or an internist or even an oncologist, yes, family doctors and primary care doctors and specialists, they still will go see patients.
Yeah, so home visits are still real. We're sorry to hear about your brother, but it is an important part of who we are as family doctors to continue to care for people. Sometimes that might be a phone call. Sometimes home visits are done by our partners or may not be done as regularly, certainly as they were done in the distant past. But we care about our patients over time, and so those relationships are important to us. And in many cases, family doctors will continue to do home visits at some level.
Yeah, I think it's important to sometimes ask your doctor, would you be willing to come see mother, father, brother, sister, spouse at our house if they got to the place where they couldn't? Because sometimes, you know, you might have a hope and a wish, but if you don't ask, you don't know what the answer would be. And I think in many cases, the doctor said, yeah, I will try to do this because this really could improve the relationship, which is the hallmark of the trust and the sacredness of being a physician that we value. And there could be a situation where, you know, you get a different service. There are those who kind of make a business by doing the house calls. And that's okay, too. But they're not the ones who've had a relationship, perhaps, with your family for 20 years.
It's true. It's true. It's worth asking your doctor if that's the situation. Thank you for that, for raising that issue and for that house call. And we wish you all the best as you process over the loss of your brother. Thank you for sharing. Daniel, what's our next house call?
I was told recently after going to the doctor with a cough and chest pain that I had pleurisy. This seems scary, and I wonder if I need to have a CT scan. The chest x-ray was negative, but the doctor said he could hear it in my lungs. He said it would get better and suggested I'd take ibuprofen. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think you got a doctor who's using their stethoscope. And we say, way to go, because the reliance on technology versus the physical examination, we kind of as educators sometimes say that's a lost art, but clearly in this case it wasn't.
Right. It's also hard sometimes to understand when you have certain chest pains and cough that what all can be going on. Of course, everyone's worried that it's their heart, but sometimes it is what we call pleuritic pain or pain that comes from the pleura, which is like the sac around your lungs. And those can get inflamed and be really irritating and extremely painful. And the doctor's right that that taking some ibuprofen or Advil or Motrin, something that an anti-inflammatory, can be helpful. And of course, time. But in the meantime, you know, it hurts and it's often worse with all of that coughing.
You know, this word pleura in itself is a kind of a fancy word. And really just that lining of the lung. And so we shouldn't be as scared by it. It could be, as you say, Christy, it could be something really bad, but most cases it's not. Should be followed up on. But again, the fact that your doctor's on top of this and certainly knows the right treatment, that's really pretty reassuring. And I think perhaps the next time you see that doctor, bring him a little plan or a little card, because they deserve some credit for really doing their job, but certainly doing it well.
Mm-hmm. You asked about a CT scan. It doesn't sound like that would necessarily be helpful in this situation, but if that's something on your mind, you should talk to your doctor about it. And
or if it doesn't go away.
Exactly. If it's not going away or getting worse, those would be reasons to investigate further.
We're glad it was figured out, and hopefully you will feel better getting the right treatment.
Mm-hmm. Great questions today. Thank you for writing us and giving us good questions to address. And we thank you all for joining us today for Your Health. We hope we've addressed some issues and concerns that are important to your health. We want you to share your questions, email us your stories. Send them to yourhealth@unc.edu. You can follow us online at yourhealthradio.org. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, iTunes, or our health app by searching one word, Your Health, for a free download.
We'd like to thank the UNC Department of Family Medicine, UNC Healthcare for their sponsorship, our great guests today, Jack, Amer, and Matan, and we hope you'll join us next time on Your Health.
On behalf of Your Health, I'm Dr. Christy Page.
And I'm Dr. Adam Goldstein, and we look forward to talking with you again next week. Bye-bye.
The purpose of Your Health Radio is to educate listeners on healthcare issues. Listeners should always discuss their own health or medical concerns with their personal physician or other healthcare provider. Your Health is not a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
You've been listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, presented by UNC Family Medicine.